You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
In ancient times.
Hey, I'm Joe Iconis.
And I'm Jennifer Ashley Tepper.
And this is the podcast that's all about my album, Album.
Today we're going to be talking about the very first song on the album called Album. Great job.
In later times. Album was a book of blank papers of white on which you'd write.
Let's talk about the song that will start it all off. What is the title song of the album called? Why it's called Album, of course.
You were referring to Album.
Now, this is the first song on Album.
Yeah.
It's the last song you wrote for the project, right?
Yes, correct.
Jerome Robbins style.
Yeah.
Like, came in, mm-hmm. told us what it was all about.
It's my comedy tonight.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just like that. How did this song come about?
The song came about because I was trying to think, as I was putting all the songs together, I was trying to think of what I wanted the whole thing to start off with. And I had a few tunes that felt like they were potential candidates for the first song on the album song, but nothing was really like taking the lead, you know? And so initially when I was first, hatching this project, I said, you know, I want to relieve myself of the pressure of writing absolutely anything new mm-hmm. for this record.
There's like so much to record already. Like,
there's so much to record already.
Of course.
It was like, and I, you know.
And so much of it would be new to anyone, but like,
yeah.
Why write something new?
Yeah. I mean, and some of the songs were like basically, you know, never before heard or, you know, once
yeah.
before heard. And so it felt like, don't write anything new, just record what you have. And then, but of course I ended up writing a couple new things. Because I couldn't help myself, and the last of which was this album, and so I really the thing that was the kicker was once I decided, oh, I want to call this album. Once I was like, that's the title of this thing.
Was there ever anything else you considered calling it?
Honestly, no, because there was never another potential title. I for a while it was just untitled, you know, Iconis and Family album project.
Sure.
And so every time I sort of had a, you know, a mental session with myself where I was like, what am I gonna call this thing? I never hooked on to anything that I responded to.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like if it hadn't been called Album, it would have been called something that had like 30 words.
Yeah, it would have been like Fiona Apple style, like a poem or something.
Yes.
But then it was truly like this flash of like, oh, if I call it Album, is that annoying? You know, it's like,
yeah.
To me, it's like calling the whole thing Album, it almost feels like the equivalent of calling my concert act Iconis and Family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the same way that it's like the family feels like, it feels so sort of huge and kind of brazen
mm-hmm.
to like call a group that. It feels kind of huge and brazen to call an album just Album, you know?
Yeah.
And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought of the different sort of meanings of that word and how, while it is a very sort of, you know, short, blunt, you know, obvious descriptor of a massive project, it also conjures up, you know, images of picture albums to me mm-hmm. and family albums and this idea of like snapshots that occur through a life. And then it started to take on more and more resonance to me, just the word, you know, and then once I got on board with that, where it's like, oh, I'm gonna call it Album, then I was like, there literally has to be a song called Album
yeah.
on Album. And it has to be the first song. Like, it was just one of those things where it's like, I could not live with myself if I released an album called Album and did not have a song called Album on it.
Yeah.
And so that was really the thing that got me to write it. And we started recording, the band tracks. So we made the band tracks first for the whole thing, pretty much. And then like a month later, we recorded all the vocals. And so We did this at the top of March, mm-hmm. 2021, and so in February.
It's like right at that vaccine, early vaccine
it was,
time.
Yeah, it was like yeah. right as like some it, people were getting the vaccines.
And people, I just say that to like, people weren't doing much yet. It was like, mm-mm. oh my God, we can finally like see our friend outside kind of time, and especially in New York City.
Yeah.
And so just like being in an album, actually recording music, even though it was like, of course, with everyone in masks and very safely done, as safely as possible, and like band, not singers yet, it mm-hmm. was so like, oh my God, we're doing a thing.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like heartwarming and dangerous and confusing all at the same time.
And almost everyone who walked in was like, oh my God, like I practiced, but like I haven't played my guitar for months or like with other people or, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah, I mean, and looking back on that time too, you know, we were recording in Power Station Studios where we've done, you know, many albums and Ian Keggy, who's our, you know, producer and engineer and mixer and plays bass and sings and does a million things. You know, he sort of runs that joint these days. And we were like really the first thing back in there after a very long time. And it was so strange kind of being in there. And it felt a little bit like, you know, a ghost town. Like
right.
it's these massive studios. And it was really just sort of like us.
Passion is forever. Now it's not forever. Dreaming is forever. Memories are forever.
An album's not forever.
Theater is forever.
An album's not forever.
New York is forever.
An album's not forever.
Lamez is forever.
An album's not forever.
Critics are forever.
Breakers not forever.
Feelings are forever.
Failure's not forever.
Resistance is forever. Goodness is forever.
Your struggle's not forever.
Power Station did such a great job of keeping everyone safe, but it's very different from how it is now, where like every time you walked in the building, not only would you have to be like, no, I have not tested positive for COVID, like, no, I don't have any symptoms. I felt like every time I walked in the building, I was like, I have not touched a pen that someone who had COVID might have touched in the past 24 days. Like, it was just like, it was so extensive. It felt like very safe.
Definitely. Yes, a fortress. But yeah, so, you know, we were recording it. We had these dates booked for the band to start recording. And, you know, because everything is very expensive in this life, we had basically 5 days to get all the band material that we were going to have on the album. And it was kind of like, if you don't get that material, then you're not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I felt like I have to write the song album before we go into the studio to record mm-hmm. these band tracks. And I tried, and because of that, I said to myself, this song has to be a short and sweet, like little song. Do not feel
that always works.
Always, yeah, clearly. Like, do not feel like you have to write something. This is me talking to myself, Joe. I would say to myself, self, do not feel like you have to write a big, huge, epic song just because it's the title track of this thing. Mm-hmm. This one, you should go out of your way to try to write something that is like the shortest song on the album. Really quick, in and out, like 3 verses, that's it. And so I started writing it, and of course, I naturally and it organically hatched this idea for a song that was like, this is clearly gonna be a very long song. It's clearly gonna be so involved. And you know, I got into it. I got into the first verse, and then I just couldn't write anymore. So I didn't finish it for that first initial chunk of, you know, band sessions. And I thought, I will get to it at some point, and we're just gonna figure out a way how to record this. And it became this thing where all throughout this whole process of making this album, which took months and months and months and months, I would say to Ian and Charlie, you know, my collaborators, I would say like, and there's this other song coming, but it's real short. It's just a little song. It's gonna be
I'm
so
sure
easy.
I'm sure they believed you. They know you very well.
They know, yeah. And they'd be like, okay, haha. You're like, it's only gonna involve me. It's gonna be really short and simple and don't worry about it. But it's gonna come eventually. And so, because of that, and because of how it all kind of worked out, I ended up not finishing writing the song until the summer when we were sort of doing our last little bits of recording. And so while a lot of the songs on the album, a lot of the 44 are songs that I wrote, you know, in a relatively short amount of time, I tend to think a lot about what I'm going to write before I ever put pen to paper. And then when I do, I tend to write fairly quickly, or at least fairly concentrated. An album was so the opposite. It was the actual writing of the song was so sort of sprawling and occurred in over such a long period of time in so many different places.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
You know, and I started the song in the basement of my family's house on Long Island. That's where I started writing it around, like Christmas time, probably 2020, and continued writing in the city and continued writing it, you know, going on retreats upstate. And it just was this thing that was like in my life for so many months. And I ended up finishing it in June of 2021, while I was out on the North Fork of Long Island at this hotel called the Soundview Hotel. And I was like kind of on the beach. And it was like, I remember like finally getting to the end and being like, I think I finished album, and realizing the song is like 7.5 minutes long. It is the exact opposite of what I set out to write. But I finished it in this like little hotel, you know, at the seaside with, you know, like beautiful sunrises and like, you know, seagulls and shit. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is like a movie. Like in a movie, this is the sort of place where a writer would like finish a song.
Right.
You know, and it's like, and it's never the sort of place where I ever finish a song,
right,
or I'm ever work. I guess I'm always like, you know, in a rehearsal. I'm always, you know, like here in a rehearsal room with a shitty piano. And
right,
it's like, it was the most sort of like hilariously idyllic place to be like, okay, this is the song. I finished it.
Well, the whole thing feels very cinematic. It feels like if there was a movie that was fictionalizing like your journey as an artist and
mm-hmm.
partially about this album, you would write the song album over many months and like you would encapsulate all the things that were the experience of making the album, and like that is clearly what needed to happen for the song.
Yeah.
And like no one should have told you that at the time, because it would have just made you write slower and think you didn't have a deadline. But like in all, like that added to the song, and like it's so much about all the times we had in the studio.
Yeah, truly. And I think that without it literally being about that, it you know, I think all of those experiences, yeah, you can hear them in the song itself. And you know, and something else that that I did in the song that hopefully people will pick up on is, you know, I try to really lightly reference other songs and other things on the album. And, you know, the obviously in the last verse, like I'm talking about, you know, my imagined, great granddaughter having blue hair. And I talk about Music You Can Hold, which is something that's talked about in the song Yesterdays. And there's the references to climbing up, you know, hills and mountains, which a few of the songs talk about. And so I just like this idea of like kind of planting little seeds
mm-hmm.
in that first song
mm-hmm.
Before you launched into this
right.
whole, you know, 3.5 hour mess. Like there were these ideas and these thoughts that were kind of like secretly, you know, working their way
planted,
yeah, into your consciousness.
I can't even imagine, like, coming from the place that I do, like, someone who isn't familiar with your work, who hears this album and that's their introduction, and hearing that song first and not knowing those songs yet, like, it's going to be such a cool listening journey for them to get those seeds first.
I think so. And, you know, and the construction of the song, too, it's something that both, like, is, I'm excited by it and scares me, you know, thinking about people sort of being exposed to my work or this album for the first time through this song, because it is so long. And for, you know, for 5.5 minutes of its running time, it's just voice and piano. It's not till the end where people sort of gradually come in. But, you know, I think that, you know, artistically, it feels correct. It feels correct that this whole big thing is starting with just me and a piano, and then we literally hear other human beings kind of enter the room and join in and contribute, you know?
Do you think you'll ever perform this song live? Like, obviously there'll be album release concerts and there'll be, you know, concerts where people are excited about this album. Like, do you think it'll be like a song that's like special to the album, or?
No, I think I'll do it live. Okay. I do, I'm excited to do it live, yeah. It's strange. I guess I've never really had the experience of like
recording something first for public.
Yeah.
Never. Ever. I don't think that's ever happened.
No, I'm just realizing that now. That's wild.
Yeah, first
Whoa.
Time.
Whoa.
Wow.
It's just like, I feel like Lady Gaga.
It's a reference I hope people understand. I don't understand it.
No. Well, just like any artist, like a normal artist who's like, they make an album and then they perform it, you know?
Right, that's how it works, I guess.
That's how real people music works, yeah.
We should talk about, because this is the first song on the album and we're talking about it, just you spoke about the band sessions. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, a very special thing about this album is the fact that, like, it includes so many people. You get so many of the actors that have participated and, like, been part of Joy Kahn's family over the years, so many of the musicians. It feels almost like at summer camp when you have, like, cast A and cast one, except in this album, there's like 40 casts, and like every song has a different set of musicians and backup singers. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like those band sessions were the beginning of realizing, like, oh, wait, like, you know, all of these musicians who've ever played over the years are each going to get a couple songs. It was very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's what I wanted to do. That was always sort of the dream. And honestly, the only regret that I have about the entire album is that I just wish I could have had more people. I mean, honestly,
yeah,
like,
no,
it's like there's 70
yeah.
artists who are on this album, 70, and I wish that I could have had 170. And there, even with all of that, there are people who still, when I think about them not being on this album, it like breaks my heart.
I totally understand.
And,
yeah.
But, you know, there was only so much you could do. And really, you know, honestly, that's where, you know, I think we did okay, but that's where the COVID-ness of it was, like, at a certain point, you know, it was hard to have that many people safely come
totally.
In. And it really required some, you know, some wild, you know, jigsawing of schedules and people's schedules and safety protocols and all that. And so, you know, I think the fact that we got 70 was great. But yeah, I always wanted it to feel like I wanted the album as a whole to feel like the artistic, you know, expression or manifestation of the Iconocent family shows, of this idea of being in a room surrounded by human beings who you know, love and connect with, and having no line between the stage and the audience, you know, having it truly feeling like one room. And I just wanted the album populated with people, you know, artists who I have an actual relationship with, you know, and I'm so proud that we were able to do that, you know. And obviously there's a lot of people on the album who have, you know, sort of sparkly names. And there are a lot of people on the album who have names that the larger population might not be as familiar with. But I'm really proud that literally every single person who's on the album, I have a connection with. They have done something of mine. We have worked together, or I've known them through the work. It's not, you know, there's no one is on this album because of their followers numbers, you know. It's like, it's for real. And I'd like to think that comes across in the performances and in the whole thing.
Well, it's such a special combination of folks that have been part of Iconocent family for years singing songs that they originated, or songs that, like, they only sang once that were really special and then they recorded it for the album.
Yeah.
And then also, like, the special bonus thing of songs that were not their song from any Iconocent family concert that, like, you know, Alan H. Green is someone who's worked with you on many things and was one of the leads in Broadway Bounty Hunter. And, like, his song that he sings lead on the album is, like, a brand new Alan H. Green moment. Like, there's such a good combination of getting people to like a perfect song, but maybe it was something they've done a million times, maybe they've never done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's that whole, you know, it's in the spirit of that, of the summer camp thing, you know?
Yeah. It was summer camp with a whole lot more COVID tests.
Yeah, that's the subtitle of the album. But the song itself, I'm really, really, I'm really proud of. I'm really happy with, and it's true. You know, the way it sort of starts. That's like how I, you know, like Googled the word album because I was like, what does this actually mean? You know,
yeah.
So I like that it's, you know, it's both a song that I think thematically, you know, represents what this piece of work is all about, mm-hmm. and also it's just you know. It's a very blunt sort of like, this is what happened.
Yeah.
You know?
You can't say this, I can say it, but like, it's just one of the most extraordinary lyrics like that you've ever written. And I feel like it's very tattooable. I feel like all the people that love getting like, you know, and I think it's so amazing when I have friends or like meet people who have a tattoo and it's like a lyric from one of your songs or a lyric from a musical theater song otherwise that's like very meaningful to them. And I feel like within a year of this album coming out, I will be meeting someone who has a tattoo of something from this song.
Oh my God. Okay, well, thank you for saying that.
It's a prediction.
Yeah, and now it's like, that's going to be the thing that I'm chasing when I write.
It's going to be
like, I'm not going to be chasing like critical or commercial success. I'm just going to be like, what can I write that people will tattoo on themselves? All of my lyrics are just going to be like, live free and play with ponies.
That is the tattoo people want.
Yeah, live free.
Yeah.
And play with ponies.
Great.
Hey. Thanks so much for listening or watching to my podcast. Do me a favor and go to wherever you just listen to or watch this thing and subscribe or like or give us a great rating or review, and then head to bpn.fm/album to find out even more information about this podcast, more ways to watch, more ways to listen, and check out my album. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Album Podcast is executive produced by Liz Armstrong, produced by Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, Kim Garris, and the rest of the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Be sure to visit bpn.fm/album for both audio and video versions of this podcast and to listen to Album.
But sometimes critics would murder all the artists, throw their...
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Suffs. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Suffs celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.